Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, this is Stuart Wright from the Bullet Fix podcast, letting you know that this week's episode is a little different from the usual format. We've got three filmmakers previewing their films at Frightfest 2020, so you'll be hearing from Cult of VHS, Midnight Peep Show, and The Ghostwriter. Plus, there's Paul McAvoy of Frightfest fame offering his personal opinion on how to get the best out of attending a festival. On with the show.
My name is Rob Preciado, and I'm the director of Cult of VHS. The Cult of VHS is a feature-length documentary. It's a love letter to the VHS format that we, most of us, grew up with, and it features interviews with collectors, film directors, and VHS enthusiasts. And we have like different things that the documentary covers, us like VHS art. Of course, we had to talk about the video nasties, and yeah, it's a nostalgic kind of a documentary, but I think it's also like a very interesting group of people. The initial idea I had is like I wanted to make a documentary that had like this global vision of the VHS format and the pop culture around it. But as the documentary, you know, as I was developing the documentary and starting, you know, to getting to know this group of people. Well, as I was starting to making this documentary with that idea in mind, and meeting this amazing group of people that I was interviewing, I wanted to have like this optimistic and uplifting feeling about watching a movie, because I was going into a depression during lockdown, as most of us were. So it was a way for me also to feel you know, that I was doing something for fun, something that people could relate to. There are a few of them, and I'm actually very excited. That it's very exciting for me to this day that I like to feel like I'm in this stage of still discovering films. So in a way, this documentary, like you were saying, it gave me that back to the feeling of excitement to hunt those films. But there's this guy, this amazing film director that was talking about shot on video features that I didn't see at the time. There's one that's, I think it's so funny and interesting. It's called Blonde Dead. That is very weird film. I'm looking forward to see that. And a lot of films that I actually missed during that time. So it's exciting to for me, it's exciting not to be like the guy who watches all the films. So I like to keep in this, you know, this atmosphere that I'm looking forward to always discover this amazing film around the corner. That's what keeps you going, you know, look into, you know, in the excitement of having that, discovering that next film. Even if your next film that you see is like boring or it's not what you expected, but in the back of your mind, you have this feeling about that, I'm going to find this jewel. You know, it's this amazing film that I'm going to remember. You know, actually, a good comparison for me. Like I was saying, like this was like my trying to have the, like this global vision about the format. But there's this very interesting documentary called Rewind This. I guess it's from 2012, 13. So it's almost like 10 years old. So that documentary, it has like that. They were interviewing people from Japan and actually, I guess, from England. So that would be like a good comparison, because most of the documentaries are more like have this American take on the subject. So Rewind This, I would highly recommend that documentary. My favorite memory about shooting a documentary, I guess it was when I was interviewing like Graham Humphreys, the famous artist, you know, for the iconic posters from the 80s. And it was very exciting for me. I was blown away that we were talking about, you know, the Evil Dead movies. And he made like this amazing artwork for Nightmare on Elm Street. So I was thrilled to have him. And he was so sweet, very kind, and it was amazing. And another favorite moment would be like we were interviewing this guy from Spain that he collects like workout videos. We were laughing the whole shoot with this guy. So that were, I think, the next moments that I remember at the top of my head. The moment I'm looking forward to seeing the most with an audience is actually, like I was saying, this guy from Spain. I don't know how the audience would react to this, to his interview, because it's in another language, but I think it's still funny, and that's one the most I'm looking forward to. And there's this amazing guy who his name is Kevin Martin, and he has like this actual video store in Canada. So this guy is very passionate. I won't say much about him, so you can discover his story in the film. But that guy is so passionate and amazing also. So I wonder how the audience will take him, you know. I wonder how the audience will react to him also. I don't have like any tips on festival, because it's my actual big international festival. So I'm open to hear more from you for tips for rookies or I don't have much experience, but I'm very excited to be, you know, one of the most important, amazing film festival areas like Fright Fest.
I am RL Anthony Hales, and I'm producer on the film Midnight Peep Show, co-screenwriter and director of the segment Personal Space. Midnight Peep Show, in brief, is about a man who stumbles across a phantom peep show booth in London's Soho. He finds it, or it finds him, and inside, through the peephole, three separate booths show him a story about sexual fantasies that go wrong. The third is his own story. The kernel of the idea for Midnight Peep Show came from remembering those now lost Soho peep show booths and fusing a Twilight Zone element into them, where through the peep show holes, clients are shown stories that encompass a nightmare side of sexual fantasy. So there was a desire also to ramp up the horror within that concept. So some recent horror we feel could cut a little bit deeper. We love things like David Cronenberg, and we just wanted to plunge a little deeper into the darkness, really. A key influence, rather than comparison to the film, would be a number of things, from Gaspar Noé's climax, which we all loved at Fright Fest, to Eyes Wide Shut, to The Twilight Zone, to Black Mirror, extreme cinema in general, be that psychological extremes seen in films like Funny Games, or the blood-soaked extremes of Dario Argento, or the uncanny mood extremes of David Lynch. My favourite memory of the Midnight Peep Show shoot was having a curry with Zach Galligan from Gremlins, So he was the voice of our games master in the center story. I love Gremlins and I really love Curry too. So a curry with Billy from Gremlins was too much for my brain to take. There are lots of moments that I'm looking forward to seeing with an audience in Midnight Peep Show. Without wanting to put any part of the film under pressure, let's just say that I believe there is something for everyone in here, moment-wise. My number one tip for film festival rookies coming to Fright Fest, which is the best of all festivals out there with the best audience, would be to go to the pub after the movies and meet other fans and film creators, because horror is known for having an amazing community of people, and it's partly that which elevates our genre over so many others. The only other thing that I'd like to say about the film that I haven't yet been able to say is that it was really, people talk about collaboration all the time, and when you've got four directors as part of a horror portmanteau exploring the dark side of sexual fantasy, that is really needed for a topic like that and for the breadth of creative scale needed. So it was really fun to have four directors kind of pour their dark hearts into this Valentine to the dark side.
My name's Paul Wilkins. I'm the director of the film The Ghostwriter. The Ghostwriter is about a failed novelist who's been told by his agent he's in Last Chance Saloon. He needs a hit novel in order to save his career. So he decides to decamp back to his old family home where his father had died under mysterious circumstances. And his father was a very successful writer, and he always lived in his father's shadow. And he goes back to the cottage to try and summon his muse. And he's freaked out by all the reminders of when he was there as a kid. So he struggles to get this thing going. And then one night he gets very drunk and he discovers this unfinished manuscript, which turns out to be his father's unfinished novel. And he decides it's much better than anything he can write himself. So he decides to plagiarize it. And as soon as he does that, the characters from the book come to life to haunt him. And it turns out it's kind of a semi-confessional written by his father that implicated his father in the middle of a murder. The initial inspiration in terms of storytelling, really, I think, probably came from the theme, you know, the idea that the pursuit of success at all costs leads to self-destruction, and probably really quite reflective of our own struggles as writers and directors, and, you know, this extraordinary compulsion we will have as to suffer as artists, really. And that was certainly the kernel for it. And then it's a tragedy effectively. So again, I think that lends itself wonderfully to the genre of horror, specifically, or particularly, I would say, psychological horror, which I think this is what this film is, or psychodrama, I think I'm gonna call it as well. I think that's a fair description of it, really. I mean, there's a lot of influences, I think. You know, as soon as you from the writing, and then when you get into directing it, you start to think of obviously lots of references. But I think The Shining is an obvious one. Maybe Misery is another. But really, many of great horror films that are fantastic in making you feel discombobulated or unnerved or something is off kilter. You know, Polanski's Repulsion. For example, the sort of idea of the unchecked, neglected trauma that rears its head and causes, you know, a spiral into madness. And there's a really good reference to The Innocents, Jack Clayton's Innocents, the Ghosts of the Past. There's a Danish film called Next Door. I forget who the director is, but I was watching that at the time. I really like that. And that's, again, about a man who's haunted by his past. It Follows. I really love that film. And this idea there's something that's coming. You know, David Mitchell says, I think it could be anyone, you know, anyone you know. And I like that idea of just this off-kilter, off-balance world, really. It Comes at Night was another one. I think it's a great film. Trey Scholes, director. So a lot of stuff, really. But I just kind of, what I'm like is I when I'm doing a project, I just dig and excavate and try and find references that resonate from all sorts of places, really. But I could probably go on and on about that, if I'm honest. Don't Look Now. I don't know if it's even. I can't say I'm not influenced by that. I don't know if it's in the film, but for me, it's one of the greatest horror films ever made. Well, working with Robin Wenery, the DOP, we spent months really planning this out, planning the shoot, shot lists, storyboards. You know, and often you do that, and you think, well, how much of this is actually going to make it through? You know, and it was really quite a joy to kind of see a lot of that translated really well. You know, that was good. Happiest memory. I mean, there was one night we filmed in the middle of the Cotswolds in this cottage in the middle of nowhere. And we went out, we had to shoot in the, and it's acres and acres of farmland. And there's a sequence in the film that you might recall that we had to shoot in this terrain. We're out for hours looking for this perfect location for this sequence. And it was getting dark, so we just thought, we gave up. So we went back to the cottage. As soon as I got back, I realised I'd lost my keys. The keys to my car. Not only is it my car, or was my car, my beloved old Mercedes classic sky blue, which is in the film, it was the car in the film. So we needed it. My keys had gone. I was epileptic, you know. And so Robin and I went back, guided by Robin's sixth sense. We literally walked for maybe 20 minutes, and he turned left. He saw this glint in the light, and he picked the keys out from the undergrowth. It was just a miracle. It was a miracle. So that's probably, I'm not sure that was the answer you're looking for, but that was a very happy memory. There were some great sequences that paid off. I got the actors gave me a present halfway through, which is very nice. Shoot got a little bit tougher after that, but yeah, I mean, there was some good moments. There were some good moments, but it's and the other thing I think about our planning with Robin in particular is that I remember the first AD coming out to me and saying that we were really getting through it, you know, really being efficient. So that was nice to hear. A scene that springs to mind is when the protagonist, Gilliger Graham, our writer, gets into a situation of a life or death situation, really. And you don't think he's going to get out of it. I'm not even saying if he does get out of it, actually. It's a ghost story, let's not forget. But he finds a very unique way of trying to get out of this life-threatening predicament. My tip is see as many films as you can. Be open-minded. Don't prejudge. Seek out films you might otherwise bypass, and you might find some, inspiring surprises. Go see my friend Ben Parker's film, Burial. There's another film. Oh my gosh, I wrote it down. Hasera. Michelle Cervera is a Mexican. I've heard a lot of good stuff about her as a director, and I'm really keen to see that. But I just think go and have some fun and just, you know, see as many of your films as you can.
Welcome to another Britflix.com podcast. My name's Stuart Wright, and today's guest is one of the four horsemen of Frightfest, Paul McElvoy. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Stuart. Lovely to be with you today.
What we're going to do is we're going to go over some film festival tips that you kindly put up on Facebook for everyone to see and just sort of go over them. But before we do, obviously you're a veteran of the film festivals, and to give people a sort of inside track on the life of someone programming a festival with, I think it's 85 slots you've filled this year?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Which is a lot of slots to fill when you start off with I imagine the blank bit of paper looks a bit horrible at the start.
I mean, to be honest with you, Stuart, there's never a blank piece of paper because it takes a year, or as I sometimes say, 23 or 24 years to put it together, because we're already thinking about titles for next August And obviously, we've nearly finished the programming for the Halloween extravaganza, which is going to be 2 days at the end of October. And then we've got Glasgow in February, March. So it's not only about titles for the August event. It's an never-ending thing. You know, certain films aren't ready for August, so they're going to fall into October. Certain movies aren't going to be ready for October, so they're going to fall into March, February, March in Glasgow, part of the Glasgow Film Festival. And, of course, we're already semi-looking at stuff for next year. So it never ends. Literally, it's a never-ending process. We never draw the line and go, right, we've done that one, on to the next. It's a organic process, you know?
But for you, then, in any given calendar year, how many festivals are you going to, then, as part of your your Frightfest work, or just you as a film fan?
That varies. Depends upon budget, as in what I've got to spend to be able to go away. Cannes is a given. That's a really, really important one for us. Alan usually does Berlin. I think I'll be in Berlin next year. Obviously, we do love to attend and support as many other genre events worldwide as we possibly can. Everything from CGS and in certain years, Fantastic Fest, or Toronto with Midnight Madness. And obviously, there's a lot of UK festivals that have sprung up now as well. I know Ian did the rounds last year. He went and visited quite a few of the northern festivals as well, because we like to support as much as possible. Although people think it's a very political game, which it can be, people fighting over premierships and stuff like that, it's actually much more of a supportive network. When it comes to Cannes, I have meetings with Peter Kaplowski, who runs Midnight Madness, and Angel, who's the festival director of CGS, and we each bring to the table movies that we've seen, ones that we're going to premiere, ones that they're going to premiere. So it's a beautiful kind of global community. We're all fans at heart, and we share information, and we share films, and we share programming tips as much as possible.
Like you say, it's a rolling program, but I'm guessing in any given year, there's always room for that surprise discovery, the film you didn't know was coming, and then you're like, this is the film for us.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, there's loads like that. I mean, there's so many.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So many that we didn't expect to get, or it took us a lot of fighting, a lot of hard work to be able to secure the premieres of certain of the films. So, yeah.
But even just unearthing something, never mind the sort of competitive side of it, but just, you know, that gem that you didn't even know existed kind of thing.
Of course. I mean, that's why our submissions process primarily is through Film Freeway for brand new films, you know, ones that from filmmakers we don't know their works. And this year, for example, every year, it's like sifting for gold. Myself and Alan watch the lion's share of the Film Freeway stuff. Ian Rattray takes care primarily of the UK stuff, because he's looking for the blood talent pieces. But it's always a great thing when you discover a film from a filmmaker or from a country that we weren't aware of, and we watch it and we're like, wow, yeah, it's in. It's great. I mean, amazing.
Can you think of any examples from this year's programme that sort of came in that sort of inauspicious route?
One that really does spring to mind, I'm just pulling it up on my list so I don't get the director's name incorrect. Let's have a look. Yeah, New Religion, which came through the Film Freeway submissions process. Japanese director called Keishi Kondo. And I've likened it in my Twitter posts to a combo of David Lynch and David Cronenberg. World premiere, he's going to be coming in for it. The film's extraordinary. I've watched it a few times and I can't wait to watch it again. And that was a real discovery for us. Really love it. And I hope it connects with the audience. So, yeah. And of course, I think you know me well enough. Two of my favourite filmmakers of all time are David Lynch and David Cronenberg. So it ticked those boxes for me, you know?
No, I've seen the trailer for that one and I'm excited to see it, I must admit. Right then, sir. Let us jump into your film festival tips. I'll read off what your brief advice was, and then you just respond to what it was that you were sort of getting at with it. Okay.
Okay, I'll do my best.
All right. For when and if you are selected by any festival, have your high-res on-set pics ready to go. Not behind the scenes. No one cares. And poster art, even if it's temporary, is good. But make it good, great, impactful.
You'd be surprised, and I've done a lot of panels, physical panels about this in person around the country, around the world, in fact. You'd be surprised how many submissions we get through Film Freeway where they don't have any on-set, high-res pics. And I know that a lot of these films are low budget, or short films can be low budget, but get somebody in that can take a decent photograph, even if it's just for one morning when you're shooting a few of the key scenes. Don't bother sending behind-the-scenes photos of here's me with the cast directing whatever. As I said, nobody cares. You care. If you're a filmmaker, you care about that picture. But that's no good for publicity promotional use, is it? You need a great quality, impactful still of the feature, not a screen grab, you know, not a high res, because you can tell when it's a screen grab. And it's a really, you know, basic thing, but you'd be surprised how many folks get it wrong, or they just don't have an on-set photographer. But cameras these days, I mean, crikey, most people's phones have a good enough resolution camera within it to be able to take a good screen, you know, not a good screenshot, but a good on-set picture. Poster art, I love. I mean, I always think it's when it works, it can be a beautiful representation of the film. But that's a different thing. That's not quite as crucial as the onset still. But I think a good poster is a very crucial factor of the promotion and the marketing of any picture. Would you not agree?
Oh no, totally. Yeah, I mean, it usually speaks to the tone. It usually speaks to maybe the influences. So it sort of does a lot of heavy lifting for your film, because most people are going to be coming to it new. So the more you can help people understand what your film is, the easier it's going to be to get them over the door. And talking of which, engage with your audience via social media, drum up promo for your screening. It doesn't cost you anything, I guess, beyond time. Encourage people to come along and engage with the account of the festival you're screening at.
As you mentioned, how many films are we showing? You know more than me.
There's 85 slots you've filled with.
85. So you've got 80 or 85 slots, and then you've got all the short films as well. So you've got 30, 40 films. To make a noise, I would suggest to encourage the audience members to come along. Get on Twitter, get on Facebook, get on Instagram, and engage not only with the fans, which are really important, but other filmmakers. You know, encourage people to come and see your film. And I can't remember whether I even listed it as, you know, later on. The other thing is, when you're at the festival, if you can, attend and promote yourself and promote your screening to other folks. Encourage people to come along to support your screening. And not only that, really, really, again, I might be second guessing what you're going to say later, but not only come to your own screening and watch your own screening, go to other filmmakers' screenings and support them. And that really works. You look at Ben Wheatley, the year of Kill List. He was in screens watching as much as he possibly could, engaging with both the filmmakers and the audience. And of course, he loves genre. And John Landis, I mean, the list goes on. Guillermo wanted to watch as many films. You know, it makes sense, doesn't it? Not to just come along, here's my film, goodbye, everybody, that was it. You know, come along. If it's just hanging out and have a few beers. But it's more important, isn't it, to support and encourage other filmmakers' works. look at Twitter now with folks like Scott Lyers and Liam and stuff, Liam Regan. They're all interacting with both the fans and other filmmakers. They're coming, they're supporting, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're an actor, an actress, or editor, or a DOP, again, come to the festival. Because as you know, Stuart, everybody hangs out, don't they? After the screening, everybody's talking. And then maybe it's the Imperial, maybe it's the Phoenix, maybe it's elsewhere. But people are interacting, and that's how films get made, and that's how friendships are made, etc. So, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It should be common sense. I think this is common sense, isn't it?
No, all of it is. That's why I wanted to draw attention to it, because I think so many people think it's complicated, or you've got to be too cool for school, or whatever it might be, but they're all mistaken. It's like the survival of festivals is built on the enthusiasm of those either attending or exhibiting, because they make up the mass number. There's only so much you can do from a festival point of view as a central thing giving out a message. Actually, all the other messages that all the other people that want this festival to thrive is going to create the noise you want, isn't it?
Because there can be nothing worse, can there? If you turn up, say you've got a film in the festival, Stuart, and for whatever reason you haven't done any promotion, you haven't supplied us with a really good poster, you haven't gone online, and if not many people come, why should they? Because we try to encourage as many people to come as possible. We can't do all of the work. Mm. You have to, you can't be sat there saying, "Well, why is it so quiet?" when you've done fuck all to promote Absolutely. Your own gig,
Well, look, you nicely covered number three there, which was support. The next one is still linked to promo. So if you can or can't attend, then send or bring some promo stuff: badges, T-shirts, posters, anything.
Even something tiny can make a massive difference. I mean, badges are always really good, as I gave the quote with Here Comes Hell. Mm. But look at the Retaliators last year. Because the marketing department behind that were, they come from the music background, they understand the importance of merchandise. So they sent us like 1,000 caps and 1,000 T-shirts, and it was like amazing merch. But honestly, I know that not everybody can afford 1,000 caps and 1,000 T-shirts and 1,000 of this. But pin badges or postcards or posters do not cost a fortune. Even T-shirts, if you get enough made, they're not going to break the bank, are they? So, yeah, just promote. Again, it's all great promotion, isn't it? Great publicity. Imagine if it rains. Imagine if it rains this year, like it always does in Cannes. Although it didn't this year, if you produced this is doing the Cannes route now. Imagine you've got a film in Cannes, or a film that you're trying to get financed for or whatever, and you can afford to make 5,000 umbrellas, and you give them away in Cannes. So everybody in Cannes got the umbrella for your film, right? Same at Fright Fest. It's probably going to rain at least one of the days. If you want to produce an umbrella for us to give out, which would be promoting your film, everybody's going to have your film, whatever it may be, in their hands. But it's down to budget, I guess.
I know this from other festival programmers I've spoken to and festivals I've attended. Don't keep chasing, badgering about whether your film has been selected or not. And don't be upset or take it personally if you aren't selected. There are always reasons why.
It's a really difficult one, isn't it? Because obviously, if you put your heart, soul, money, passion, time into producing something, you're going to take things personally if you're not selected. Mm. But angry emails do not help, do they? And also persistent emails as to why, what were you thinking, etc. Sometimes you just, it's like in life, isn't it? If you go for a job interview, you can't really fire off an email saying, "Why the hell did you select me for this job?" But it's even more tricky and delicate, isn't it, with filmmakers? Because if your latest opus, which you think or believe to be brilliant, is brilliant, it will find its legs in another festival. It will find its home. Mm. But more importantly, what about your next project or the project after, where we might really love it, but then, as you said, somebody's going to remember, oh my God, that person on email or on Facebook message, that seems to be the one that I seem to get a lot of, is they're going to remember, aren't they? Christ almighty, this person was a bloody nightmare. So, you know, it's a thin line, isn't it? It's good to be passionate, but sort of rein it in a bit if you can.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. For short filmmakers especially, if you don't get selected and you can attend, then you can see what the programme has selected, and then that can maybe inform what you do next.
Sheila Rowan-Legg selects the lion's share of our shorts. She puts all the short film programmes together. There's a couple of shorts which I've selected which are going to be shown before a couple of the features, but most of the stuff's done by her. So if, for example, there's a vampire comedy splatter short that she loves, and then you've made a comedy vampire splatter short that she doesn't love as much, she can't program both, can she? And also, I think the key element, which I didn't mention, because, again, it should be fairly self-explanatory, you wouldn't believe the amount of short films that we get that are over 20 minutes long, which it's impossible to screen them as part of a showcase, because if you've got 90 minutes or 100 minutes maximum, you can't overbalance it by having a 20-minute piece and then a bunch of other shorts. And also, if that 20-minute film, which could be a masterpiece, goes on before a feature, most people in the audience are wanting to watch the feature. They don't want to sit through, no matter how good it is or whatever, a 20-minute short. So it's very, very difficult to program. So shortness is better. 8 to 12 minutes maximum, maybe 6 or 7, but 8 to 12 is the sweet spot in terms of length for a short. That's my opinion.
Well, no, it's a common opinion, and I don't know why it doesn't seep through more to people. I don't understand how you can't just do the maths in your head, that 90 minutes... 10 minutes a film gives you 9 films. If you make them longer, you've got less and less. It just it makes perfect sense to me. This I find odd, but I imagine this is based on experience. So if you do get selected for shorts and attend, don't walk out with your cast and crew and friends once your short has played.
I think I don't even need to add anything to that. It's happened. It really has happened. And that's not great, is it? Again, Stuart, if you were sat waiting for your short to play and then 8 people, 6 people, 4 people or 3 people walk out for reasons other than, you know, needing to or don't particularly like the showcase or need to go somewhere else or whatever, it's obvious, isn't it? When a whole swathe of people, you're going to be royally pissed off, aren't you? You're not going to be happy. So it's just, you know, courtesy and general manners.
A nice segue into don't be a dick. Moaning at festival programmers to why your opus wasn't selected never goes down well.
I think we covered that one, mate.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you might get the email, but then the idea that you would that you would be at a festival and then collar them blows my mind. It was quite illuminating reading your list, because, you know, obviously some of it, like you say, is just common sense, but others I was like, really, people do that? I mean, as far as I understand filmmaking, it's a long game. It's not like a snap decision. You know, your presence in the industry is kind of earned, and your reputation is all, isn't it? Audiences, if you like something, great. If you don't, great. We all have different opinions, but don't be a dick, especially online or in person to the filmmakers.
Now, this one's a bit difficult because everybody's entitled to their own opinion, and that's good. So I'm not being the dictator and saying you cannot slag off a film online, but there's ways of doing it where it's not personal, and you know what it's like. Luckily, 9 times out of 10, I think, with the Fright Fest audience, they are respectful, and they are respectful online. It's just occasionally the line does get crossed, but thank goodness it doesn't too much, because you look at other, you know, crikey, thank God we're not screening any Marvel or DC stuff, you know what I mean? The, you know, the trolls and the fans and all that stuff, it's just... Yeah, life's too short, isn't it?
I'd much rather be celebrating a film than kicking one.
I think at the end of the day, I mean, it's really easy, isn't it, to go online or in person and slag off a film and say, oh, yeah, shit. But it's all down to individual taste, isn't it? I mean, it's what I like, you're not going to like sometimes, and what there's going to be a lot of stuff we both like. So I think, you know, and that's the same with the festival. And again, I've said this before, if you like werewolves and like comedies, go and see the werewolf comedy movie. If you don't like werewolf comedies, you read the synopsis or even the title of the film, don't go and see it. You know, there's another few choices of, you know, if you don't like werewolf comedies, there's probably a serious, you know, French film which we're screening, which isn't a comedy at the same time. Just choose wisely. I think I'm going ahead of the rules, aren't I?
Horror is a broad church, as Frightfest and Sitges and everywhere else that programs horror proves every year. So why would you expect to find your horror just by walking in the room for the next film that's on with, you know, completely uninformed?
It's interesting, Stuart. Interesting, Stuart, you use the word horror because, I can't remember whether I wrote this, but Frightfest never has been a pure horror festival. Okay, we probably should have called it Fantasy Fest or Fantastic Fest, which again, that came to be. But it would be boring, wouldn't it, if we had 85 hardcore gore splatter horror movies. Every year we had science fiction, fantasy, thriller, everything from Pan's Labyrinth to Nolan's Insomnia to Donnie Darko. These aren't horror films. There's a whole bunch this year which we're screening, which aren't horror. We are a reflection of what's being made this year more than any other year, and nothing to do with Alan's role in the Trieste Science Plus Fiction Film Festival. He's the festival director of that. There's a lot of great science fiction stuff. So it's not just Frightfest. Frightfest is genre horror, science fiction, fantasy, and thriller.
Mm. You are the dark heart of cinema, not the home of horror as you was once.
Yes.
Yes, there's a film that's playing on the main screen, Incredible But True, which is astounding, but it's not a horror film.
No, goodness me, there's loads on. But if you do want a diet of pure horror for 5 days, it's there for you.
Mm.
But you're going to have to go to the Discovery screens and read the Alan's blurb, whatever. That's fine. I mean, I love horror, but I wouldn't want to sit for 5 days and watch the horror only. It's got to be a lovely mix, a wild mix of stuff, you know?
Now, this is one of the reasons why I guess a lot of people come back to Frightfest and other festivals that they're loyal to is be kind. Online, in person, say hello to the person in the queue next to you, sat beside you, smile if you're too shy. Cool, we understand. And I think I was lucky enough to be a sort of sleepy queue veteran, and I met people in the sleepy queue that I'm friends with still.
Yeah, I think that one's self-explanatory as well.
So, in short, have fun, be kind, support it to your fellow filmmakers, audience members, and the event itself. Be a decent human being. It can't be that hard, can it?
True.
Well, look, that's the list. That was really great to go through it and to reflect on. I thought it was really useful and a timely reminder. We touched on a few films that are going to be playing at Frightfest that you've already highlighted in the context of the advice. But just generally speaking, do you want to just point out some of the things that you're most excited for the Frightfest audience to see in 2022?
Well, I think the most exciting thing, Stuart, is going to be seeing you again face-to-face. That's the deal. No. Well, of course, apart from that. I think, look, the films are exciting. The guests are incredibly exciting. But the most exciting thing is seeing people in person that we haven't seen for many years or first-timers. But I think it's the community. That's the thing about Frightfest specifically. Mm. Other festivals have got a great community, but Frightfest one, the community is extraordinary. So that's what I can't wait for, is the Thursday night when everybody's coming back together or coming there for the first time. Electrifying atmosphere. The films are great. I mean, we've got some amazing stuff and amazing films this year. Way too many to even list off. Otherwise, we'll be here all day and all night. But no, I just want people to have a really good time. I think it's going to be wonderful this year.
Indeed. Well, look, it does now give me a great pleasure to say thank you very much for giving you time on the BritFlix podcast.
Thank you so much, sir. Great to spend some time with you. Can't wait to see you in person.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.